The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. Pedro Gomez will jump on board. Pedro, ESPN Baseball Insider, based on the Diamondbacks, winning last night, taking care of business. Eddie Olczyk, NHL on NBC analyst. Very excited to have Eddie O on because he just beat cancer, which is cool. He is into the horse racing scene, so I'm surprised even as time, because I'm sure he has money after the Derby this weekend, past weekend. And what does he see out of the Vegas Knights and the Arizona Coyotes? Two different teams in two different directions, obviously. Dale Hellestray is going to check in studio today, former Saguaro High, Super Bowl champion offensive lineman with the Dallas Cowboys, man about town on the high school and college front. Want to have Dale drop on in. And then very excited for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University sports and athletics. Jake Wong will be with us. Jake Wong, formerly at Hamilton, is killing it this year at GCU. He is 8-1, an ERA of 2.5. He is their ace. He is going to be drafted. He's a terrific backstory. So we'll talk with Jake Wong. That is all straight ahead on today's show. Opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, protect what matters most, and that means you've got to do it through life insurance. Do you have life insurance? Have you thought about the prospect of getting life insurance? Well, don't put it off. I mean, we all are in that space where we need to be protected. Protect what matters most. Get life insurance. Go online. Get your free quote right there at Sagicor Now. Sagicor. We appreciate their support. I didn't make it through the Diamondbacks game. Eric, did you make it through the game? We'll check with Eric in a second. I didn't make it through the game until I got to the 10th inning last night. Did you, Eric, make it through the game? Were you in the space last night? I was in the 10th. The Dodgers had the bases loaded, and the next thing I knew, it was 4 a.m.
So, no, I was not up for the
win.
I watched most of it, and then the 3.5 hours I spent out in the sun watching spring football, happily watching spring football yesterday in the West Valley, kind of took its toll, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to bed.
You were done.
Yep.
You were done. There was a lot last night in that game. There was just a ton.
It's unique, too, that the Diamondbacks will play the Dodgers. I mean, that's kind of different.
That's new. Right? It's different. It's just like enough of these. When you see that A.J. Pollock, this puts your point into perspective. We've been making fun of the Diamondbacks and Dodgers schedule here for the last couple of days because, like, come on, enough of this.
And they don't play again until the last month of the season.
Right.
Like, schedule makers, really?
And the Diamondbacks are catching a huge break. Playing the Dodgers right now, where the Dodgers, most of their best players aren't playing. They're hurt.
Including their ace.
If you're a Diamondback fan, you don't like hearing that. You're thinking I'm making an excuse. No, sometimes you need luck. It is lucky that the Diamondbacks are not facing the Dodgers. Corey Seager isn't playing. I go down the list of players, right? And just say, oh, they don't have this person. They don't have Justin Turner. They don't have Clayton Kershaw. They don't have Yasiel Puig. So this is who the Diamondbacks are getting. And so what? It's the way it goes, right? This is what you're supposed to do, is find ways to win games. Beyond that, to your point, Eric, A.J. Pollock hit a two-run home run last night in the first inning. That's his 11th home run of the season. Well, guess what? Because they played the Dodgers so many times, seven of those 11 by Pollock have come on Dodger pitching. That's amazing to me. So we're sitting here, not even just the start of the second week in May, and seven of his 11 have come against the Dodgers. The Souza play at third base last night, where he slid in hard, but I thought it was a true baseball hard play. I know on the TV broadcast, they brought back up a hard slide by the Dodgers in Phoenix. Souza gets up last night. He gets yelled at by Wood. Well, guess what? Wood's pitching against the Diamondbacks tonight. So you have to ask the question, is there going to be any retaliation or not? Because the Diamondbacks have smacked and slapped the Dodgers around so many times this season. Last night, tempers flared a little bit. Are they sick and tired of seeing one another? Yeah, it's early May, and the Diamondbacks have blown the door off the Dodgers. Corbin is throwing tonight. I think it'll be interesting to see if there's any sort of nonsense on Travis Wood's part towards Souza tonight. There was a shot during the game that Mark Grace, it was good to hear Mark last night on the air, shot last night of Mark Grace when Souza and Goldschmidt and Zach Greinke. I'm sure you guys remember this. It was like the eighth inning. And three of them were talking, and Souza was adamantly pointing out towards second base. And it was a conversation that it appeared to be about what happened in that play last night. So again, we go back to how we like the grit of the team. We like how the team comes out, and every night their games are interesting. Last night's game is very interesting. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt, guys, is hitting 221. Think about that. He's hitting 221, and the team is off to the best start in the history of the franchise at 221 from their big gun in the middle of the lineup. So, and the Dodgers stranded five in the extra innings, and somehow the pitching got through. McFarland got the win last night. So all the way around, very entertaining game. 12 times in 36 games so far, these two teams have played, and they go again tonight. Pedro will be with us here in about 6 minutes. We'll talk further about the Diamondbacks. I would think that the Suns would be announcing, if they haven't as of yet, a press conference to introduce Igor Kuzkov as the new coach of the team. Last night, Utah was eliminated. I did see a little bit of that from James Harden doing his thing. And Chris Paul finally makes it into a Western Conference final. I was last night at a track meet in the afternoon watching my son throw shot put and discus. And it's like 106. So you guys know we're underneath the bleachers. Well, of course, it's junior high track meet. So what's happening on top of the bleachers? Kids are spitting down below inadvertently. So I'm trying to dodge like pigeons are flying over me. And then last night was an orchestra concert, string bass. So it was cool. It was cool. But I was on my phone before and after because you guys know this. You've been there. If you haven't been there yet for the kids' orchestra concerts, it's great. It's fun to pay attention. But there's a lot of downtime. They got to change this group out, bring this group in. So there's 5-6 minutes where I'm watching Houston win it. And then I'm seeing Golden State and New Orleans. And, man, I love where New Orleans is. I love the direction that Alvin Gentry has them. You've got Drew Holiday that's doing his stuff and Anthony Davis inside. And, yeah, they got run over by Golden State. Everybody gets run over by Golden State. But you see a team that is emerging. And it goes back to, in the Western Conference, the idea of the Suns getting a new coach. In 6 days, they will have the draft lottery. We'll have a clear indication what way they will go, may not go. So there's that I got into last night. Yesterday was not a good day if you're an Arizona State football fan. Braden Leibrock, top tight end in the state, said no to ASU. ASU is finishing second, finishing third, or not finishing once again this year. But at least it's not as bad as it was last season where they just completely whiffed, missed, weren't paying attention, asleep at the switch, with Tyler Shuck and Brock Purdy. It's not that bad. They're trying. It just, you've got kids like Leibrock, who's one of the best tight ends in the nation, who's not going to ASU, he's going to Texas. You could make the argument of when was the last time a high school kid from Arizona went to Texas and it worked out well, and you'd have to wait an awful long time to bring up somebody. I tend to look at it as a different era. Coach Herman down there is doing a great job. He wants to use their tight ends. I'm sure ASU is going to continue to recruit Braden. But yesterday was a blow. They're not getting Spencer Rattler. He's going to Oklahoma. They're probably not getting Jacob Conover, the other good quarterback. Or there's lots of good quarterbacks. The other quarterback at the top of the list from Chandler, he's probably going to go on his mission. Probably go to BYU if Stanford jumps in. So not going to get him. They're not getting Gunnar Cruz, from what I can tell. The other quarterback out of Castile. So you just start going down the list and checking off the boxes of who's coming. I don't see an impact player right now in this year's class of 2019 that's going to either ASU or U of A. And it's another year of, we got to close the borders. Yeah, I've heard that. It's not happening. Pedro is next, and then guests aplenty today. Wednesday, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show. Tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, 4 airings before and after tonight's Diamondbacks-Dodgers game. Stay with us. And now Pedro Gomez joins us. He is on the road. He is in Florida every week. We talk baseball, things going on around the major leagues this week. Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst and insider. Always good to have him on the show. You are in Florida doing what any good dad would do, and that would be to watch your son, correct?
That is correct. I'm in Fort Myers, and unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to see him pitch because he's pitching tomorrow, and I am flying tonight.
Yeah.
So, but I, you know what? It's always just good to catch up.
Yeah. How's he doing? Where's for the listening audience? Give them the background, backstory of where he is, the organization, all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he was you know, he pitched those 3 years at the University of Arizona, got drafted by the Red Sox last summer, and right now he's at extended spring training, waiting to be assigned somewhere, and you know, hopefully that'll happen sometime soon. And if not, the short season A-ball season starts in about a month, and that's the New York Penn League, Lowell, Massachusetts. So there's a number of possibilities that still could happen, and you know, and he's continuing to stick with it, which is what you have to do. Minor league ball is a grind, and it's almost like it's to see who can put up with how difficult it is, and that's kind of the guys who continue to stay on.
It'd probably make for a good doc, wouldn't it? I mean, you with
probably.
Your background in media, yeah, I mean, with what you've done and where you've been at the highest of the highest, for you to bump around for 10 days, 2 weeks on in documenting that stuff, you'd probably have something really cool there, but... just me thinking out loud. You got enough on your plate as it is, but all right. So let's go through the Diamondbacks here. So they lose Robbie Ray with Taijuan Walker. They sign Clay Buchholz. Let's start with him, and then I'll get to some of the other names and candidates. Clay Buchholz, what are they getting here?
You know, Clay Buchholz's ceiling a few years ago was so high, and then things just kind of fell apart for him. I mean, if he could somehow find a little bit of magic that he had when he was with the Red Sox, you know, that could be incredible. But it's one of those things where a lot of clubs try to find lightning in a bottle where it once existed. It's kind of like the Reds trading for Matt Harvey. It's, you know, the D-backs signing Clay Buchholz. It's one of those things where it's low risk because there's not a lot of money involved, and yet the upside could be pretty big, and that's, I think, what Mike Hazen and the Red Sox and the D-backs are hoping for with Clay. He's still young. Mm-hmm. He's not by any means an old guy. So if he can just somehow figure it out again, that could be a nice addition.
Okay, so why is John Lackey still on the board? Or give the fans and even myself an idea on this. When you have injury early in the season, you're typically not going to go out and make a big deal because you don't know where you're going to be, right? And so you go this route of the Buchholzes and John Lackey sitting on a couch somewhere. He's close with Hazen. He hasn't come off the board. And then by the time you get to what, Memorial Day, Pedro? It's Memorial Day and 4th of July. You know where you are. You know if you're in this race or not. You start making bigger moves. Is that typically the calendar?
That is usually how it works. You get to find out by mid-June or so, usually by Independence Day at the latest, whether you're a real player or not. And that's when clubs decide. Like right now, the Atlanta Braves are and the Phillies are having tremendous first 5-6 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. But will they still be there on July 1st? And that's where I think a lot of GMs wait and see, okay, are we for real or not? Well, we should know by then. In the case of the D-backs, I think it's you've got a lot of players who already have a proven track record. So I think they know we're going to be in this for the whole season. So it would not surprise me if Hazen started making moves before clubs like the Phillies or the Braves did, where those young players are still unproven.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, the D-backs are doing all of this without arguably their best player really doing a lot in Paul Goldschmidt. So
hitting 220. You know, Goldie, it's 220 now,
I know,
Pedro.
And we know he's a guy that can carry a club
right
for weeks on end. So if they're here in first place without Paul Goldschmidt really being a big contributor, I think they're kind of holding on and saying, okay, when Goldie heats up, we're going to be even better, which is scary for the rest of the National League West because they're already so much better than everyone else in the division.
Okay, so when you look at the Dodgers, and I'm not going to – I don't like the schedule already 13 games and 36 of them between Diamondbacks and Dodgers. It's just too many.
I know, that's crazy.
It's just not good, but – if you're a Diamondback fan, it's fortuitous because the Dodgers are so beat up. They don't have half of their stud players or star players even out there, or they're gone for the season. So there's no reason to apologize for that. I guess it's, if you look at the Dodgers, when you start losing guys for the year, as they've done, they don't have Justin Turner back, but they've lost Seager for the year. Kershaw, who knows, if it's a 10-day DL and he comes back, he's fine. They're supposed to get Puig back tonight. How far back until you look at them and say, this just isn't happening for them this year?
I don't think you need to wait for a time. I think you need to watch what they've done the first 6 weeks. And, I was talking to a National League evaluator the other day about the Dodgers. And the one thing that struck me that he said was, they don't do anything well. Hmm. And if you're a club that doesn't do anything well, that doesn't bode well for your chances of really turning things around. And I think that's kind of that area right now where the Dodgers are. I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that, look, they spend more than anybody in the National League when it comes to payroll, but all these injuries have shown how top-heavy that roster is, because once you lose a Turner, a Forsythe, a Seager, a Puig, well, the reinforcements that are coming in mm-hmm. aren't nearly close to being what you need at that level, and that's I think where you see how top-heavy that roster is. Look, when the D-backs lose a Jake Lamb, Devin Marrero comes in, and he's doing a good job.
Right, right.
You've lost Jake Lamb, who's an all-star, but you haven't lost that much. And you lose a Taijuan Walker, you lose a Robbie Ray. Well, there's guys filling in because your roster isn't so top-heavy that you can't have quality at that second level if you're the Dodgers right now. And the Diamondbacks are showing that you do need to have that depth, and it's coming through for them.
Yeah, I mean, I myself would rather see them go bring up Cook than go sign Matt Harvey. That's just me. You got to find out if some of these guys – and Cook, that's a Dave Stewart pickup. People forget that.
Yeah, Cook has done really well.
That was Addison.
He's been up.
That was Addison Reed, right?
Yeah.
He was the throw-in on the Addison Reed deal, and that was a Dave Stewart deal. So everybody wants to crush Stu for not figuring it out or not getting it done. That's one that right now I'd say big win for the Diamondbacks. I'd much rather have that than a veteran who's up and down, who's a grump, unless I'm missing it on Matt Harvey. He may find lightning in a bottle in Cincinnati. But
Yeah, Matt Harvey's case, there's a lot more going on. There's the off-the-field issues.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's something the Diamondbacks want to mess with at all. They have a really, really good clubhouse chemistry. I remember when Alex Avila was being courted by a couple of teams, the Diamondbacks being one of them, he called J.D. Martinez, who's a good friend of his. They both grew up in South Florida. They both played with the Tigers together, and said, hey, man, the Diamondbacks are talking to me. Tell me, give me a scouting report. And J.D. Martinez's report back to Alex Avila was, they're hungry and they're good. That's a really good clubhouse. Mm. I would really recommend you go there. And sure enough, Avila signed with, the D-backs based off of J.D. Martinez's scouting report.
Before I get you out of here, you may have missed it last night. It was East Coast. It was a late game for the Diamondbacks, but the Steven Souza slide into third base, he got into it with the Dodgers dugout and Travis Wood. Wood is throwing tonight against Corbin. I don't know if there's going to be fireworks or not. I'm not trying to get too high or too low or too excitable about all this, but Souza clearly was upset. They caught him on camera late in the game explaining it again to Goldschmidt and Greinke. Has there been anything when two teams play each other as many times as these two have so early in the season? Do you think it gets to the point where they're sick of each other and a situation like last night boils over tonight?
I think you always see that, whether it be in the playoffs where you play each other seven times in 9 days. You see it in hockey when playoff series get going. You do get sick and tired of each other, and they have played each other an inordinate number of times so far for being so young in the season. Souza hasn't really been a part of it because he was injured for the first month.
Right.
But, Souza's a competitive guy, and that was always his MO in Tampa. And Alex Wood is a veteran. Alex Wood knows how to take care of things. I would not be surprised at all knowing that this is the last time they play for several months, if the situation arises, I think Alex Wood is such a veteran that only if the situation arises, he will try to exact a little bit of I don't really want to call it
revenge,
but yeah. Just
payback,
you know, evening the score, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And I think that Alex Wood is definitely capable of that. If it was a young, like a Walker Buehler, no, I don't think he would do it. And I don't think the club would allow Walker Buehler to get into it. But Alex Wood being a veteran, yeah, I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah, good stuff there. Hey, enjoy your time in Florida. Thanks for the visit, as always.
Okay, man. I'll be home late tonight.
Yeah, safe travels.
Probably in the 13th inning of the Dodgers.
right. See you later. There's Pedro Gomez on the road in Florida. Good stuff there with Pedro. Eddie Olchuk is next. We're going to talk some hockey and also his battle with cancer and much, much more with Eddie O. On the other side, I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, before and after the Diamondbacks and Dodgers game. Let's turn our attention to the NHL for a few minutes, because I know Coyote fans that I've run into have said, if Vegas can do it, why can't we? And there's lots and lots of reasons as to why. Hopefully the building situation gets worked out. We figured let's find Eddie Olchuk, and I know that Eddie's been really busy with the Derby and the NHL on NBC. He also, his battle with cancer, colon cancer that he went through. There's a lot that's been going on with Eddie. Eric was able to track him down, and we appreciate Eddie Olchuk being with us. How are you, Ed?
I'm doing fine, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. Health is good, though. Let's get right to that. Fans are sending me notes. Tell them congratulations, good luck, and that you've been able to beat it.
Yeah, well, I'm very, very thankful, very lucky to be on the right side of the grass and had incredible support from my wife of almost 30 years and my kids, my folks, my brothers, the hockey community, the horse racing community, and fans all across the National Hockey League. Just very, very lucky, and I want to try to inspire people to make sure that they're getting their routine checkups and to try to keep people away from this horrible disease, because it was 6 months of hell that I went through, and just one day I woke up where I couldn't go to the bathroom, and next thing you know, I'm having a six-hour surgery, having a tumor of the size of my fist and 14 inches of my colon removed. So I got lucky. I had incredible support, and as I said, in the middle of March when I was cancer-free, when I got my scans back, is that we did it, and I really believe it was a team effort, and I'm very thankful for all the support.
Is there just one follow-up on that? If you had any advice for a guy who says, well, I'm only 35, I don't need to get checked, or I'm 55 and I've never been checked, okay, which way would you go on this one to those people?
I would say find that age in between those two ages you just mentioned and go get checked. There's nothing wrong with being proactive and, and getting screened a little bit earlier than when the doctors say it. Of course, you want to, talk to your doctor and your physicians and what have you. But look, I mean, they told me if I would have had a colonoscopy when I was 45, they would have kept me from having to go through 6 months of hell of chemotherapy. So, again, it's not in my family. I didn't have any signs that I was aware of. And next thing you know, my world came to a screeching halt. So look, I know there are a lot more people out there, Brad, that are way worse off than Eddie Olchuk, and I pray for them and I feel for them and I pull for them. But my goal now and my mission is to keep one person away of having to go through what I did. Now, if that's being proactive, then get in there and see a doctor. The numbers don't lie.
Right.
Colon cancer is up from ages of 35 to 50. So why not be proactive and not wait? And I've had hundreds of people come to me and say that they heard my story and they went in and got screened. And that makes me feel really good, because there's got to be something positive besides me being cancer free now that I can help somebody either deal with it or, be proactive and to stay away from it, because it really it is a really stop you in your track moment. And I was able to have incredible support from my family.
When did you feel as though that it was time to get back at it? And you've gotten, your workload is really heavy. The Derby, the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's not like you put a toe back in the water. You just went full bore.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, over the course of my treatments, did a couple of games every month or whatever, and just kind of tried to stay active and help pass the time. And then once I got cleared and started to feel a little bit better, both in Chicago doing the games locally with the Blackhawks and obviously nationally with NBC with hockey and horse racing. It was like, okay, you know, we'll just take it one day at a time and see how I feel. And yeah, I get a little run down a little bit more so than I did in the past, but I'm feeling good and staying active. And but yeah, right. Yeah, I'm jumping in. I mean, this is an incredible time of year. Pucks and ponies, hockey and horses. No better time of year, and very lucky to be a part of both at this time of year, because this is when the most eyes are on both sports when it comes to hockey and horse racing.
Yeah, it's a good name for books, ponies and pucks. I mean, you've got how to pass the time of cancer. On a serious note, so let's get into Las Vegas. Is Vegas the new hockey town? I don't think there'll ever be another hockey town, but is Vegas the new hockey town, at least for 2018 of spring?
Well, maybe a hockey town in the southwest of our great country. To me, maybe you can argue the Loyola Ramblers the year that they had in men's basketball. But, I mean, if Vegas is not the sports team of the year, there's something wrong. There should be an investigation. Like, to be 8 wins away from the Stanley Cup, really? Like, that is an incredible story. Incredible ownership. Visionaries as far as how the game needs to be played or how it's going to be played as far as success. And look, some guys stepping up and having incredible seasons. You got leadership in there from, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury and Derek Englund and James Neal and David Perron, guys that have been there and done that. You need that. And also you need to have your young guys step up. So look, there's a plan. It's in place. And they execute it, and they got a coach behind the bench that really gets it, and they play a certain way. But you got to have the horses. Like, you got to have the talent in order to play that way, and Vegas has been able to do it. So, look, it's an incredible story. They got a legitimate chance to get to the Stanley Cup final without question. Like, they're going to have their hands full, whether it's Winnipeg or Nashville. But to get this far, I think if I'm sitting in some other cities and you're struggling and you're wondering, like, how in the hell are we not – you know, farther along, because there are teams in this league that are well behind. Now, will Vegas take a step back next year? Will they have a letdown? Quite possibly. But to be able to do what they've been able to do is just an incredible story. And I think it all starts with the ownership and filters through the management group.
There's people that say too much success too soon is not good for the league. I say, guys, you can't turn the clock back, so let's not sit here and debate that this is not good for the NHL, for other markets that want to come into play. I disagree. I think it's great to send the message that you can't use that cop-out and that excuse, and some of that is directed towards the Coyotes, not the present administration, Eddie, but I think if Vegas can get this thing figured out, why can't Arizona?
Well, look, I mean, that's a great question, and you have to have the resources as a manager, as a president of hockey operations, somebody to be the face of the franchise. You got to figure it out in talent assessment, make some decisions, and, you know, which way are we going? Are you in or are you out? Mm-hmm. And that to me is the biggest question mark. And look, I agree with you. The success is incredible, because you know what? There's somebody out there with a lot of money that is thinking about getting into sports ownership.
Yep.
Whether it's a National Hockey League or not, and they sit there and go, holy cow. Now, look, at the rules were very advantageous for Vegas. Let's not make any let's not mince words. They're very, very advantageous. But they had to go out there and find the players, and they identified the right players. So there's something to that. And look, at whether it's Arizona, Chicago, New York, Rangers, Islanders, doesn't matter. Get somebody in there that can assess talent and give them an opportunity. I'm not saying 1 year, 2 years. You got to give somebody, you have to give that person an opportunity, who, regardless of what it is, and give them the resources. If you're not, you're not going to make the playoffs. The league is too good. There are too many talented teams, and there are too many teams that spend to the salary cap and have the ability to have extra scouts out there finding these players. And, you know, do you have the right coach? Do you have the right manager? So to me, it all starts with the ownership, and then you have your people in place to make the decisions. And if they don't have success, well, then you know what? Then it's time for a change, and you got to figure out who's going to be the face of the franchise to help get you where you want to get to. And it's very interesting, you know, with a lot of different teams in the National Hockey League, with not being able to, you know, take that next step. And I'm not just saying, you know, take the next step for winning and getting into the playoffs. I'm talking about the next step of being a real consistent team in the National Hockey League for many years.
Talking about Eddie Olczyk, before I let you go, NBC has the National Hockey League playoffs, of course. Before I let you go, Eddie, on the topic of Rick Tocchet and the job that he's done, I know you're head deep in the playoffs right now, but what did you make out of the Coyotes this last season, the job that Rick did, the building situation out here? You referred to ownership. There's a lot there. Deep dive for me a minute or two on what's going on here in Arizona.
Yeah, well, I think Tock, great experience, obviously, in Pittsburgh. You know, got his chance in Tampa, and now second time around, you will be a much better coach. Just talking to coaches, that second time around, you know, you're just much more prepared, a lot more confidence in what you're doing. Look, they got some good young players there. Still a long ways to go, some problems to fix. But, you know, it comes down at the end of the day is that you got to be able to manage people, Brad. You got to be able to manage the guys that you have. Mm-hmm. You got to get them to buy in, and you got to get them to believe. And I think as the year went on, that certainly happened. They didn't get off to a great start. You know, that's well documented. But I think Tock is the type of guy that can rally the troops and give his guys an opportunity. And all you can do is give them the information, and they got to go out there and play. And you got to figure out what guys are in and what guys are out. I don't care if the guy was a first-round pick 3 years ago or a fifth-round pick 2 years ago. The best thing that I learned when I was coaching in Pittsburgh some 10 years ago, Brad, was this, is figure out who your guys are, mm-hmm. the guys on your roster, before everybody else in the NHL does. More times than not, you got smart people in the NHL. You can't keep throwing bad money after bad money. If you draft a guy in the first round and he's a third or fourth line guy, figure that out before everybody else does, so at least you can get something back for the guy. And I think that's the problem where managers and scouts, you know, they don't want to admit they made a mistake or whatever for whatever reason. Like, sometimes you got to own up. You got to take ownership. And that's just – I mean, look, I can name 15 teams right now, and there's probably 32 teams that do that, you know, every year. But I think you kind of know where I'm going. It's like you got to evaluate your players. You got to know which guys you want to go with. And make that decision. But I think Tock and his staff did a really good job after a tough start, and hopefully they can get it right. If not, then ownership has to figure out are we giving them enough resources, and then you work accordingly from there.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate the time and the insight. Congratulations on the health, and keep it up. Thanks, Ed.
Okay, appreciate it, Brett. Thanks.
It's Eddie Olczyk there with us. Good stuff. NHL on NBC. Dale Hellestray has been in the Valley from high school through the NFL, and now he's on the backside of the NFL on the field. He's doing a lot off the field. We'll have Dale in studio, and then we'll have Talk to the Lopes with Jake Wong. He's going to be a draft pick, maybe a high draft pick. He'll be on Talk to the Lopes with us here in about 15 minutes. But Dale Hellestray is on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports, our football AZ show on Fox Sports Arizona. 16 airings, four of them tonight before and after the Diamondbacks play the Dodgers. Dale Hellestray has come in studio, and I saw Dale like 7 months back on the sideline at a high school football game, and it was, I got to get you in studio because here's a guy that's won at the highest levels in the NFL. Here's a guy that's local from Saguaro. Here's a guy that's on the post end of the NFL career on the field, and you've done well. You do the Rattlers. You have a daily radio show. You're coaching too, so there's a lot of ground to cover, and I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so in terms of what do you enjoy doing most now, post-NFL life? What's it like for you, Dale?
Well, I enjoy talking, so I do enjoy doing the radio, and I enjoy all sports, and I grew up enjoying all sports. You and I were talking a little bit yesterday. If I didn't play basketball in high school at Saguaro, I would have never been recruited to be a Division I football player. So I'm a huge let's play more sports, not just specialize, especially at such a young age. So I love to talk about all sports, so that's a lot of fun. But I do enjoy coaching because, you can help mold these kids. Mm-hmm. You can teach them a little bit of discipline. It's fun to see them grow and mature. And actually, when they come back 3 and 4 and 5 years later, go, I don't even recognize you anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just a really cool feeling when they remember that you had somewhat of an impact on their life.
It's kind of like I teach at Cronkite in the fall. and kids this last week graduate, and they all want to be in this business, and I try to talk them out of it. But it's the same sort of deal when you see that go full circle. Your NFL career, when you look back on it to where you are today, how did it help you prepare? Because I sit with a lot of guys that finish their career, and they are, quite frankly, lost souls.
Right.
They don't know what to do. Running out in front of 70,000 people is over. Healthcare benefits, concussions, injuries, all that stuff comes into play. How did you make it out?
Well, I tell you what, what's interesting about that is I think it's how you're going to face things. And I think when you play as long as I did, I played 17 years and you had a chance to plan. We owned a cookie store for 25 years, my wife and I, and we recently sold that. And I was always interested in the broadcasting part of it. Mm-hmm. And I always knew that I wanted to coach if I didn't make it to the NFL. And when I was in high school and maybe till my senior year at SMU, I didn't think I was going to play in the NFL. I had no dreams of playing in the NFL. So I had some backup plans. And so now some of those have come into fruition. Now I haven't become Troy Aikman or Tony Romo.
Yeah.
But I'm
or Jason
finding my
Witten.
Niche. Or Jason Witten.
Right.
But I have found my niche, radio. Everybody tells me I have a face for radio.
Get out of here.
And so, you know, doing college games and getting to travel the country and seeing some of these other venues you and I were talking about. I mean, you go to a game in College Station. You go to a game at Penn State or mm-hmm. Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. If you've never been to a venue like that, you don't really understand the passion. And so that's fun in the fall. And then broadcasting the high school games, being around the kids here and seeing them grow and seeing them from sophomores to juniors and then seeing the Christian Kirks have the success that they've had.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun.
No, it is a lot of fun. And you do the high school games for Cox 7. You do the radio nationally for
its Compass Media Network.
Compass Media. And you're this fall going to be Big Ten?
Big Ten, Big 12, and SEC is usually the gamut that we run. Yeah, so you get to see, you know, get to see Clemson, and if you've never been to Clemson to see a football game, it's mm-hmm. spectacular. Just the pageantry around it, plus the fans, and how important it is to them. You know, and I've heard other people talk about the fact that the West Coast. I mean, I don't know who you would say is the biggest hotbed on the West Coast, but there's so much to do out here. Mm-hmm. If you're in Tuscaloosa, Alabama on a weekend in
not
September,
much.
October, there's not a whole lot else to do except for cheer for your team.
How did you get away from ASU? Let's go back to college because in high school, offensive lineman at Saguaro mm-hmm. was Saguaro in your era as it is today. First, let's start with that.
I don't think there's been anything like the Saguaro of today. We were pretty good. Brad, I tell this story. When I was a freshman at Saguaro, I was 5'9", 135 pounds. If they didn't have 50 guys on the varsity, a junior team with about 45, a JV with 50, and two freshman teams, mm-hmm. I don't think I'd have made the team. And I was 5'9", 135 pounds and wasn't particularly fast. So that's not a good combination.
No.
And so, but nobody knew I was going to grow to be 6'4", 220 by the time I was a senior with my size 15 feet. So I'm thankful that there were so many people in the program or kids in the program that gave me that opportunity because I would not have been Michael Jordan and said, hey, I'm going to prove these coaches wrong. I would have, who knows what I would have done after that. So the Saguaro program, we went to state championship my junior year. We lost to Mountain View. They had a little running back named Rodney Brewer.
Everybody lost him out.
And I don't know if we've tackled him yet. I think he had 250 yards rushing against us.
So you get recruited. Your first recruiting letter was from?
NAU.
And ASU. Did you ever hear from ASU?
I did not hear from ASU. Frank Cush, I graduated in 80, so that was when he was kind of going through his
stuff.
His legal stuff.
Yep.
The thing that kind of took me aback was we had a quarterback named Kevin Smith who was an All-American, Parade Magazine All-American, and ASU didn't even really talk to him. And we just heard that Scottsdale kids might be a little too soft for the ASU program.
Oh, wow.
I think that's changed over the years.
Well, I wish they would keep local kids.
I wish they would keep.
You mentioned Christian Kirk. I wish they would keep local kids here. When you look at high school kids today, because you do offensive line coaching, mm-hmm. training, what is the biggest mistake that parents make when it comes to getting linemen together and getting them coaching?
Well, I think the number one thing is, you know, everybody hears about the quarterbacks. And that's the glory position, and everybody wants to play quarterback and all that. So I think parents are naturally drawn to that. I tell every parent, offensive line, if your kid's got size, every college needs 10, 12, 15 offensive linemen. They need maybe two or three quarterbacks. Mm. And so your odds are, go way, way up. And as far as the way I go about coaching, I'm all about technique, because I think if I can get your feet going, get your hands in the right place and your body in the right position, you have a chance to be good. At the end of the day, if you have the size, you have a chance, because every coach, every college coach out there is going to say, you know what, I can't coach 6'6", 285. Right. You know, if you're 5'11 and you're 220 pounds, I'm going to love you as a high school coach, because I know you're going to run through that wall for me, but your college potential is going to be limited. So as far as talking to parents, the other thing that I'm big on, Brad, and I know you are too, is the fact that do other things.
Yeah.
You know, do other, whether it's another sport, whether it's another activity. I don't care if it's football and ballet. I don't care if it's football and water polo. Mm-hmm. Do something other than just play football all year round.
Yeah, it's. I think the age of specialty is somewhat starting to turn. I think that message is starting to get out. Concussions, are you good?
Well, that depends on who you ask. I think I'm okay, but if you ask my wife, she's going to tell you that there's some issues there. And again, it's one of those things where you're just having a conversation, and sometimes it happens to me. You know, I'm in the middle of a really good story with a great punchline, and I'll forget where I am in the story. So sometimes you go, is that from hitting? Is that from age? How does that come about? But the more you learn about it, the more you understand it's real. Mm-hmm. The thing I love about where we're at now in football is at the high school level, you have any symptoms, you say your head hurts, you're dizzy, you're out. And so we're going to treat it. The research I've done is you get the damage done from repeated concussions. And, you know, back when I was playing and back when you were growing up, the fact that they'd hold two fingers up and you'd guess one, and they'd say, try again, and all right, let's go, you're good to go, and some smelling salts. I think that's where that damage can come.
Concussive hits, I mean, that's the thing. You got to let it breathe and sit down on it. Being a cowboy, what does that do for post-career? You mentioned Romo, and you mentioned, I mean, all the guys go down the line. What does a Dallas Cowboy, champion Dallas Cowboy, do for one's post-NFL playing career?
I think what really shocks me is how popular the Cowboys are, and I mean that positively and negatively.
Sure.
The fact that, you know, you can say Kansas City Chiefs, and people are going to go, eh.
Len Dawson.
Yeah, they're okay.
Yeah.
You know, Minnesota Vikings, they're okay.
For you Chiefs and Vikings fans, it's Dale Hellestray. Okay.
But if you say Dallas Cowboys, you're going to have a lot of people, I love them, and you're going to have a lot of people say, I hate them. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to have a passion about it. If you're in Dallas, I guess what shocks me the most is the fact that how many people out here still recognize me from the Cowboy days. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Dallas, they hang on to those 90s like there's no tomorrow. And I tell everybody the fact that before I got traded there, you know, Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin were there. They didn't do diddly squat. Everybody talks about the Herschel Walker trade. I say it's undisclosed draft pick for Dale Hellestray that kind of made us turn the corner. And then we went on to win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years.
That's good. That's good. But the business side for you, you can get asked to go to a Cowboy convention or a signing thing, and the line's going to go down the street to get to Dale Hellestray.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. As a long snapper, backup offensive lineman, to actually say you're recognized by people, that's all a product of the Dallas Cowboys. And again, whether you want to call them America's team or not, they're the most talked about NFL team, and they're the most cared about positively and negatively. So that does open a lot of doors. My wife and I made a decision when I retired / got cut in 2000 was the fact that we could have stayed in Dallas, and there probably been there would have been a lot more business opportunities in Dallas, but both our families are out here in the Phoenix area, and we own a cookie store. And so we said, we need to find a place to settle. Let's settle out in Scottsdale.
Before we get you out of here, do you want to get back into coaching at the high school level? Or do you like being the broadcaster? Do you have other business interests? Or is a tug on your heart? Because some guys, Dale, they go do all the business things, and then they wake up and say, I'd really like to lead a program. Or are you just content with where you are?
Well, the way my schedule works out now, I can only help coach at smaller schools. And so what I've appreciated the last couple of years, I've been at Northwest Christian Academy, to where they allow me to be there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and be a part of the program. You can't do this at the bigger schools because I'm not there on Fridays.
Yeah, they want you on Friday.
Yeah, and if you're a coach, and it stinks with technology now, all the stuff that you guys are doing, you know, I can go on the iPad when I'm in Alabama or Ohio or whatever and watch the game, but that's not like being there. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. Still get to have interaction with the kids and help them with practice, but it kind of sucks because you're not there on Friday nights.
Yeah, come back again sometime. It's good to visit.
Thank you.
Dale Hellestray with us in studio, and we're back with Talk to the Lopes after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. Reminder tonight, Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. Stay with us. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics across the fruited plain at GCU. Things that are going on the field, off the field, in administration, everything around the Lopes. We appreciate Talk to the Lopes each and every week. Now, Jake Wong is with us. Here's a guy that Coach Andy Stankiewicz brought up to me a long time ago. He said, just keep an eye on him, keep an eye on him. Heard the name at Hamilton. Comes from a sports background, heavy sports background, and you're going to hear his name around draft time. That's just the way it is. Jake Wong is with us. He's on the season 8-1, an ERA of 2.55. Thanks for coming on Talk to the Lopes, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no worries. No worries. So you have a big series coming up this weekend. You've had a great season so far. You've had a terrific run since Hamilton. All that is great. But how on God's green earth, when dad played soccer, mom played basketball, and your sister plays soccer, did you end up going the baseball route and not other stuff? It seems to me, nothing wrong with baseball, it seems to me that you have enough in you that you could have done any sport. Why baseball?
You know, it's kind of funny because, like, as you mentioned, my dad was a soccer player, my sister's a soccer player, my mom's was a basketball player. So it just kind of, it's funny how it worked out. But, you know, ever since I was very little, baseball has always kind of been my first love. And, you know, I started playing when I was in T-ball, and you know, ever since then, it just kind of stuck with me. And it, like I said, it was kind of just my first love. And ever since then, I've just kind of ran with it. So it's just kind of how the cards unfolded, I guess.
When did you know that you were going to be good at baseball? When was the moment? Fourth grade, striking out 15? I don't know. Grand slam in eighth grade. When did you know, hey, I'm pretty darn good at this?
You know, it's tough to say, but I guess growing up in Little League and stuff, I was kind of one of the better players, and I was kind of always on the All-Star teams and mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So that was kind of when I knew if I had stuck with it and continued to work hard and, you know, and really put my nose to the grindstone, that this could be a possibility for me, and this could be this. The game of baseball could lie in my future. So I guess that's kind of when, you know, I really started to kind of, you know, get an idea that maybe, you know, I could be good at this thing.
Did you try any other sports?
Oh, yeah. You know, growing up, I played basketball a lot. That was kind of my second favorite sport. And then I also played football. So it was kind of I mixed around and tried different things. But as I said, baseball was always kind of my first love. And still is, so.
Well, when you're at Hamilton, and I live out in that area, so I know the Bermuda,
yeah.
The Bermuda Triangles, I like to call it, where there's all these schools, and there's all these clubs, and there's Chandler National, and there's just this, it's hard to explain to anybody who doesn't live out there just how competitive, and how if you're a good athlete, you're going to have coaches from all sports. And at Hamilton, you're going to have coaches from all sports trying to track you down
right.
and say, hey, right. why don't you go try this or try that? And you've got Coach Woods doing his thing. At the time, Coach Bellis doing his thing. And so you navigated through all of that. And again, I'm going to go back but drill down a little bit further. When did GCU come on your radar, and why GCU after high school?
Yeah, so, you know, I was – it was kind of a long recruiting process, you know, for me personally. You know, I was really just looking forward to an opportunity to play at the next level. You know, attending a bunch of showcases and you know, a lot of different tournaments around the valley. And it just so happened that Grand Canyon was out at one of my games, just kind of watching, not necessarily for me, but just, you know, just kind of taking in a ball game, just kind of seeing, you know, some prospective talent. And so, you know, I happened to pitch that day, and I had myself a nice little outing. And, you know, after the game, at the time, the former pitching coach approached me and you know, said he enjoyed what he saw, and, you know, he expressed some interest. And from there, it just kind of, you know, it kind of took off. They came to a couple more of my games and saw me pitch a couple more times. And from there, it just kind of, like I said, just took off. And you know, it turned out to be just the most wonderful opportunity for me and my family. And, you know, I really honestly couldn't be any more happy. And, you know, I'm just very thankful and gracious that, you know, I was given the opportunity here at GCU, and I just kind of ran with it.
Jake Wong with us, talk to the Lopes every week, talking GCU baseball with the ace of GCU's staff. Your first time that you walked on campus, obviously the facility where it is now is beautiful and amazing. Mm-hmm. But when you walked on campus, were you given the, here is the vision of what we have, or was that not even part of the discussion, not even part of your recruitment?
No, the vision was certainly part of the recruitment process. And, you know, honestly, it was one of those things that really got me excited about coming to GCU, was just the fact that, you know, it's a growing campus, you know, with you know, a tremendous student body, you know, also just the opportunity to be a part of, you know, a growing program, you know, that mm-hmm. GCU's had success in the past. And, you know, that's obviously exciting and something you want to hear. And, you know, they told me when they brought me in, you know, during the recruiting process, that this is a growing thing and that, you know, there's big plans ahead for not only the stadium, but for the program. And that was something that really lured me in and got me excited to be a Lope. So like I said, you know, the first time I walked on campus, you know, during the recruiting process with my parents was kind of like, wow. And, you know, looking back, it's like, wow, that was nothing, you know. If you see the campus now, it's just right. It's just crazy, and it's really something special. So, as I said, you know, I couldn't be any more happy with where I'm at, and I'm a proud Lope. So,
do you become a Havoc during basketball season? You paint your face and all that stuff, Jake?
Go. No, I don't go. I don't go all out like that. But
you're not the guy with the pineapple. You're not the guy with the pineapple on the head that I see.
No, they've got too many of those guys. You can't steal the spotlight from them. But no, we like our baseball team. We always go out and support those basketball guys, and you know, we try and make it out to as many of the sporting events as we can. Just, you know, because just the atmosphere and the student body is just so great that, you know, it makes every sporting event just one that you can't miss. So it's really fun.
All right, let's focus then on the field. And a couple other questions I'll let you go, and I appreciate you being with us and your time today. This season, so I've had Coach on a couple of times early in the season. Mm-hmm. He sounded like somebody ran over his dog, and he was you know, a little bummed, but at the same time, it's okay. We're yeah. Tough competition. We're fighting through it. Now in conference play, things are going very well. You have a big series uh-huh. coming up this weekend against Sac State.
Right.
Tell me about the season so far from a team standpoint and then from your standpoint. Your numbers say amazing, awesome. You may look at them and say, Brad, come on, I could be better than this. I don't know. Walk me through
it. No, yeah. Yeah, so as you said at the beginning, we played a tough non-conference schedule. You know, we had our ups and downs early in the season, and we had some early season woes. And certainly, you know, those – You can do one of two things. You can just dwell on those, or you kind of move on and learn from them. And under the guidance of Coach Dank and this coaching staff, you know, we kind of just we took the approach to kind of learn from it and get better from it, and understand that we played these tough non-conference games to prepare us for the conference schedule. You know, as you said, we have Sac State this weekend. You know, and you know, they're a really solid ball club, and so we've got a lot out in front of us. And that was kind of our approach as well, is just understand that, you know, the best is out front, and, mm-hmm. you know, we just got to keep going and stick with it and stick with one another. And so we've done that, and, you know, our team dynamic is great. You know, we have a lot of confidence each and every game. And, you know, it's really showing in our play. And I guess for me personally, it's obviously been a pretty good season. I'm happy with how I've done, and You know, my goal in each and every outing is just to give my team a chance to win. You know, pitching on Friday nights, it's you're always facing, you know, the other team's ace as well. And so the biggest thing is you just got to give your team a chance to win, and I feel like I've done that. So I'm happy with where we're at and where I'm at personally. But, you know, as I said, we control our own destiny from here, and we're looking forward to what's ahead and to the big weekend ahead in front of us.
All right, so, and that's going to lead me over to the side on the draft. You're probably going to say, I am focused on the season, Mr. Cesmat, and all of that, which is fine. What about the draft, Jake? What are your true thoughts on the draft and the talk about you?
You know, certainly it's an exciting time for me and my family. You know, as you said, the kind of my main focus truly really is to hear what DCU at the moment. But, you know, I understand what's ahead for me. And, you know, certainly it's exciting and something that I've always worked for. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm lucky enough to get my name called on draft day, then, you know, certainly I'll be, you know, ecstatic. And but, you know, as you said, the main focus right now is just kind of finishing out the season strong and, you know, letting the draft take care of itself. And so, you know, certainly it's something that I've always worked for and it's something I've dreamed of as a little kid is to get my name called on draft day. And, you know, as you said, it's kind of just it's one of those times where you kind of have to – It's hard to stay focused on the present, but and not look too far ahead to the future. But like I said, I'm just going to control what I can control and let that take care of itself.
So here's what usually happens in draft and doing 30 years of this on my end. On draft end, every team looks at players and all of that, and it's fine. It's good. I try to find out what the local team has shown of any interest. I think that's more interesting for the listener and even for yourself. To that end, do you think the Diamondbacks have shown any interest in you? Have they watched you pitch? Have you heard anything on the Diamondbacks end?
No, I've definitely talked with the Diamondbacks. You know, growing up, I was kind of a D-backs fan, you know, being as I'm a local guy. And so, no, the D-backs have came to watch me pitch, and I've had several talks with them, and certainly I think the Diamondbacks are in play as far as the draft comes. You know, I guess you really never know what's going to happen, but like I said, the D-backs are certainly in play, and I've had several talks with them. You know, I've gone and visited the spring training facility just kind of as I guess, like a pre-draft type, you know, introduction. And so certainly given the opportunity to play for a Diamondbacks would be awesome. You know, being as I was born in Chandler, my dad formerly worked for the Diamondbacks, and so that would be really neat. But
what did he do?
You know, he was the vice president of human resources.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
The
academic side, tell me about the GCU academic experience.
Yeah, so I'm a junior and I'm studying sports business management. So I'm in the Colangelo College of Business, and it's been nothing but a positive experience with all my professors and with all the courses. Certainly, there's different courses that can be challenging, you know, as expected. And certainly, like I said, my experience with just the academic side of Grand Canyon has been tremendous. You know, I speak very highly of the professors and just the kind of the course outline for each individual class. And you know, certainly you're going to have your challenges just as you would with any university or institution. But, you know, there's so many resources here at GCU to kind of help you along and to help you succeed that, you know, certainly there's no way that you're not set up for success. And so that's something I really enjoy about GCU is that, you know, they're always looking out for your best interest. And there's so many resources available to you as a student and as a student athlete that, you know, they set you up for success. So it's tremendous all around. You know, as I said, GCU is kind of the place to be, and so I'm speaking for people on my team and just people at the university in general. It's just a great place to be.
Got about 30 seconds left. Baseball ends tomorrow. Your arm blows up. Can't do it anymore. What do you do with your degree? What do you want to do outside of baseball?
You know, I would say that I've always kind of, being as my dad is kind of in the sports business industry, I've kind of always looked at that as a possible career path for me as well. And so if I could work in baseball in any sort of capacity, in the front office or, you know, in some sort of capacity with a professional baseball franchise, you know, that'd be something that I'd certainly be interested in. I'd like to stay in sports, you know, so I guess I don't really have a clear career choice, you know, as of now, but just something in the sports business industry would be a great opportunity.
Yeah, well, after visiting with you for the last 10 minutes, you could do this, too, if you decide to go the broadcast route. So you can come take my job. So good stuff there. I appreciate the time. Good luck this weekend and with the draft coming up, Jake. Thanks.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Good stuff there. Jake Wong with us. And that is Talk to the Lopes this week.